Everyone, I cannot believe that I've managed to squeeze into this incredible woman's schedule. Amy Carmody, thank you so much for joining us on Love at First Science.
Thanks, darling. Congratulations. Thanks for having me.
So, Amy, you are such a powerhouse. You are someone that's doing more than probably the president of the United States. You've got a small child. How old is he?
My first son just turned 4,
Okay, so he's little.
and he's little, and I had my next son, Jack, 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, and actually, it was amazing because you and I actually had an interview scheduled literally as he came out of you. And I was like, are you sure this is okay? And you were like, yeah, I've got a really hands-on husband. It's all good. I mean, unfortunately, Wi-Fi played against us, which is why we've rescheduled to now. So thank you so much for being flexible as well. But in addition to that, you've got an incredible membership, which is a thriving business. And looking through your content online, I mean, you're constantly putting out high value content. You clearly know your stuff. And it's so refreshing to see people out there that are bossing being a mom, bossing their business, and at the same time, really wanting to make a difference in the world. So I want to say huge congratulations, and you are such a huge inspiration as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a very fun ride. Thank you.
So, babe, can you please tell us a bit about you, a bit about your journey as to what got you to where you are? And then, as you know, we're in the core sections. I'm going to start going really deep into what your perspective is on this topic.
I am from Melbourne, Australia, and I've been teaching yoga since 2010. And I was 18 when I did my teacher training. And not long after I did my yoga training, I decided to sort of keep studying movement. And I was really enjoying going to the gym at the time. So I also did my just kind of straightforward cert 3 and 4 to become, your general personal trainer. And then literally since then, I just haven't stopped studying. I haven't stopped doing courses. And just have learnt from the most amazing people. And I feel very glad that right from an early age, I didn't want to just study the one modality or with the one teacher. So I think that that's really gotten to me to where I am now, just having so many, different umbrellas in which I've learned from that has allowed me to, in my teacher training, I say, it's actually really powerful to learn from extremities. So people who believe one way. And then I always encourage people, find someone like that and then go learn from the people who are shouting the opposite narrative, because it allows you to kind of hear the two ends of the spectrum and make up your own mind and add in, what you have learnt from experiences and then go out and teach what you sort of believe in. So that's kind of like what the platform represents to me is I basically just teach the classes that I have always wanted, both in terms of, I teach strength classes, mobility classes, yoga classes. And then, once the platform was up for a while, I was like, fuck, I'm so excited to get prenatal and postnatal up because I've never found that content that I like. It's always been like really fluffy mums and bubs or something like that. And so yeah, that's gotten me to here.
Abe, I mean,
Exciting.
okay, just want to say, looking at your content, it's apparent apparent how well educated you are. And what I really like about your story is I do come in contact with a lot of yoga teachers that, in spite of all of the various courses they've taken, they feel underqualified because they haven't gotten a degree or letters behind their name. And what's so wonderful about looking at your story is that you just kept learning and kept putting good quality info out there, and you actually built a successful business from that. So I wanted to kind of call that to people's attention that are listening, that are maybe in that headspace of, oh, I don't know enough, because it's very clear that if you have the knowledge, you don't have to have letters behind your name to make a success of yourself.
Oh my God, I don't even have my 500 hour, you know, and, you know, to all the teachers out there who might be listening, I remember once I was kind of getting penalized in relation to my pay scale going up. And they said, you know, the only way that you'll get a higher pay bracket is if you become a 500 hour accredited teacher. And
what does that even mean? Yoga lines don't do anything. They don't actually do anything.
And I said, yeah, I was like, have a look at my course list, mate, and then come and chat to me again, because that is crazy. You know, to discredit the courses that are out there, and especially when there's proactive teachers like yourself. You know, I know you're doing a lot of Z Health stuff, which is amazing. That there's these proactive yoga teachers out there who are going and doing courses beyond the spectrum of yoga, where there is so much nectar. And, you know, to be penalized payment wise because we're not just studying one theory is wild to me. So I push the ceiling on that one.
I personally, having done a physiotherapy degree, feel like my Z Health training is even more valuable than what I learned at university. I mean, that's to the level that I would go to say that possibly university isn't the answer always. But just going back to what you said earlier about finding the opposite ends of the spectrum, I'm so, so happy that you mentioned that. It's actually something that I've been saying at the start of all of my workshops as well. I'm like, look, this is one take on things, and my biases and my skews go into looking at the research, and I try and make everything evidence-based, but of course I am championing one sort of style, and I want you guys to find people that say the opposite thing, and I want you to then, off the back of listening to both sides of the spectrum, come up with your own conclusion. So thank you so, so much for reiterating that. I think it's vital. And on that note, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this whole core series, because the kind of traditional aspect of the core that has been coming through thus far is that we need to grip our core for it to be strong. And whilst I think a strong core is something vital, I think to say that there's only one way of achieving a strong core is crazy. And also, gripping the core doesn't take the pressure system into account. And so I've gotten some amazing people on the podcast talking about this already, but I would really love to hear your perspective, Amy.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, again, I've learned both ends of the spectrum of that, you know, we need a strong core and to engage the core and stress the core, which all hold valid reasoning. And then, you know, there's so much research and information coming now, thankfully, about how important it is to have the capacity to soften, you know, and I speak so much about it, the importance of appropriateness in relation to our core and our pressure system. And, you know, and we'll get further into it and how much of it is linked to our central nervous system. And again, this is why it's really important to remember that one notion doesn't fit all people and all bodies, because we are all sitting at different ends of the spectrum. You know, myself growing up an ex-ballerina, is I'm a gripper, right? And so it didn't get highlighted to me about you know, over gripping until after I had my first child. And so what's equally important is I've had to re-educate and retrain my body to not just soften, but to also utilize the call appropriately at the right times in the right manner. I just think there's so much more depth to the core and how it relates to how we're living life, more than just like, oh, that's too much clenching or that's not enough. It's quite complex.
Oh, it's so complex. When I put together the core workshop that I released, the amount of work that went into it and the depth of research was vast. And then the stories started coming through. I mean, people that had been living by the traditional standardized narrative of, you know, you must grip your core, you must engage your core, you need to be rigid for it to be strong. All the troubles these people had faced. I mean, I'm talking big issues. And it was just heartbreaking to me that they had experienced so much at such a young age. I'm not talking moms who've delivered. I'm talking young women that are having severe prolapse issues or incontinence issues, severe anxiety because I haven't got that diaphragmatic movement, issues like IBS related to core gripping. And as soon as they discovered that it's so much more than just holding it in one rigid shape, how the problems then started alleviating. Can you expand a little bit more on your story around this?
So as an ex-ballerina, I guess the message is more in relation to, you know, the body appearance. You know, and like there's, it's the same as a European or a, you know, a model in New York. The aim is to be thin. There's no hiding that fact. And I don't think anyone within the ballet industry is trying to hide the fact that that's the aim and that's the aesthetic. So for me, that's definitely not my body type. So it was drilled into me, you know, by my teacher to just constantly lose weight. And, you know, she had quite an invested interest for me to lose weight because she said, you have so much talent, but you just don't have the body.
I want right? to cry hearing and, these words.
Oh, no, it's sad, isn't it? And then, you know, my brother also was a ballet dancer and he went on to be quite successful. He was in the Australian Ballet and she used to say, why can't you have a figure like your brother? He's very tall. He's very lean, right? So he's all my mom's.
I'm not him. Shock horror.
And she was like, she got more talent and you got the body. It was like this play against each other. And, you know, he was so sweet. He used to say to me, I'm so glad you never joined because I would never want to see my baby sister go through what I see all the women go through here. Yeah. So thankfully, you know, I found yoga. But, you know, that was like that traditional sucking in, actually, where it's like you suck up and it exposes the ribs. And you can't even talk when you do that. So that kind of sucking in gripping to basically expose bones. You can see it now. Like if, and again, yeah. I showed it on my Instagram is it's the abdomen lifts up and it's such an unnatural process to what, you know, there's a necessity for things to go down. Right in our pelvic floor, like so. I guess I just grew up with that. You know, whenever you look in a mirror or whenever you try a pair of jeans on, it's this. and so, I went through my first pregnancy. I was 27 when I fell pregnant, and after I had an emergency C-section after a super, super long and hard labor. I went to the physio for my post 6 weeks check to see if I could go back to exercise. And she was like, great, stomach looks, you know, it's all feeling really great. Let's do an internal ultrasound. And I was like, oh, I didn't have a vaginal birth though. And she's like, oh, that doesn't matter. Like, you know, pregnancy is a lot on your pelvic floor. Like, it's always great to see what your pelvic floor health. And so for me, I was like, oh, I don't have any issues with my pelvic floor. I don't, like, you know, I didn't have any issues in terms of, I didn't wet myself when I was pregnant. It's definitely, you know, I didn't have a vaginal birth. So, and anyway, during the assessment, she was like, and relax. And I was like, yep. And she's like, you're not relaxing. And you just see this like pelvic floor on the screen that's like relentless, right? And she and I was like, I am. And she's like, I don't think you've ever relaxed in your life.
Wow.
Right? And I guess, you know, you say that, you know, you're powerhouse, you're doing a lot, blah, blah, blah. It's interesting, isn't it, that someone who does a lot, they work a lot, they, you know, it's probably in my nature that I grip and I don't relax. So that's something that I've been working on ever since then. That's like 4 years ago now. And quite interestingly, the more I came aware of that, because it was more of a like a nervous system thing rather than I think like a physical ailment. Like I could relax. It's just that my nervous system was always in that state of like on. And so when I kind of taught my body of like, oh, you're safe to go down this end of the spectrum, I think I also then became stronger in my core in a really positive way. Probably because it wasn't so goddamn fatigued all the time.
Yeah.
You know, my handstands got better. My lifts got better, my positions got better, pain. Like it's quite interesting that the better you get at softening, then now I believe that my core is actually, you know, I don't love to say this word much, but it's more functional. It's actually functioning the way I believe that it's designed.
Evolved to. There's so much research to back up what you're saying as well. It's actually crazy how, you know, they did these incredible studies where they looked at breath holds and then, you know, strength output. And every time people had natural movement of the diaphragm, their strength increased. Now, obviously, we're talking about things like Valsalva method coming into that. Of course, appropriately, you are going to hold your breath for certain things and there will be the gripping action for if the load is excessive. But actually, once you get used to that load, we should be dropping that strategy. And that's what actually increases then output. So then you can't just move that fridge once. You're able to do it multiple times because you've got the pressure system supporting your core. And you alluded to the word pressure system, and I've asked this on almost every single podcast, but I'd love to hear your perspective on the pressure system. And also maybe, this is a double question, maybe start with this one and then go on to pressure. But can you just tell me, how did your transition into yoga, was it a positive transition? Because for me, it wasn't. I didn't find that yoga taught me, in a way it was, but it wasn't in terms of learning about the core, for sure not. Everybody was still on the gripping train and it really caused quite a lot of disruption in my personal body. And I saw it in my students as well. So maybe start with the chatting about your experience within the core / yoga realm. And then can you touch upon the pressure system, please?
So my transition into yoga, the first style that I started with, it was very restorative. And that was the training that I did. It was very esoteric. It was very restorative. We didn't practice on yoga mats. We started every single class with like a 20-minute nidra. There was no like power yoga or anything. It was very, very different. And so, no issues had sort of started with me until, I got more heavily into the vinyasa and the power yoga scene. And simultaneously, that's when I also started doing CrossFit. I'd been weight training for a while before that. But you know what? To be honest, I didn't really hear of anyone using languaging around the core. It was all Bunda discussion. And, I know that you sort of have done a lot of discussion around Bundas. And to be honest, I have never, ever, ever gone down the the path of funders or teaching them. And I also really haven't ever taught much pranayama in terms of traditional yogic breathing. I've always just tried to teach people how to diaphragmatic breathe and breathe with diaphragm mobility, just simply because that whole narrative of bandhas and different pranayams doesn't ignite a spark of interest in me. And, you know, so thankfully I didn't go deep down the bandha track. but that was really the only option we got given. Was like, okay, well, when you're in a headstand, it's like the Jalandhara, Uddiyana Bandha, all that. But thankfully, I had quite a beautiful, more Anusara-trained teacher who taught more like loops. So spoke in that discussion of, you know, the throat loop and the heart loop and the pelvis loop. So it's more like positional rather than don't breathe, suck in. So it's kind of been like a good thing and a bad thing that I didn't get the opportunity first and foremost to learn how to move with the core, because simply I don't think anyone knew how to. But thankfully there's now more physiotherapists teaching yoga and people more challenging that whole bandha narrative. And now it's, you know, probably the reason why you're doing the podcast is that it's like you're either on one side of the fence or you're on the other side of the fence. It's like, yes, you need a really, really strong core, and then there's other people trying to be like, no, relax it, relax it. So it's funny. I feel like I'm sitting back with a bucket of popcorn.
talk to us about the pressure system. You touched on the diaphragm. That was your main segue into teaching people how to breathe. And obviously the diaphragm and the pressure system work together. So can you give us your insight on that?
So it's really complicated because you have to teach or almost sort of teach people where to breathe again in that zone one. Because obviously we're so many of us are sort of really big zone three or clavicle, you know, breathing up around the collarbones and the neck, and then, you know, commonly into the chest. And people have forgotten because we are born. I always say, look at the children yeah. breathing, look at how.
And the dogs and the cats.
Yeah.
None of them grip.
I think I cried in my core lecture on my teacher training because I speak about he was three at the time, my son. You know, he was walking around the backyard naked, and he has this beautiful big round belly, as little toddlers do. And it was, you know, they have this beautiful round stomach out in front of them, and then I was just sort of watching him, and it was all relaxed, and he has this beautiful lumbar curve, quite excessive, you know, this anterior little tilt because his little gut's sticking out. And then he went to go pick up something that had all this dirt in it, and I just saw him sort of appropriately use his core, like the big soft belly went. But it didn't go into that, you know, stomach lifting up, ribs exposed. It went into this, like, appropriate use of his pressure system. There was, like, a demand and a stress in front of him, and his body just knew straight off the bat how much to engage for that load at task.
Perfect.
And so I think people have really forgotten how to trust their pressure system.
They don't even know it exists, and then they fight against it for so long that eventually it becomes it gets rewired in their brain. They don't know how to access it anymore. But unfortunately, we can't live without it. Everyone is biologically wired with this pressure system. If you don't move your diaphragm, is going to probably have some fallout elsewhere because it hits so many systems. So I know that you were talking about the nervous system. You touched upon the nervous system, and you've got a really beautiful way of thinking of the nervous system in relation to your core.
Yeah, so I like to say to people that, you know, our nervous system does everything possible to keep us safe and to survive. And I think, you know, I was saying to you once that there's this awesome American guy, and he runs like strong man camps. And, you know, he always says, like, our core is there for our survival. And I think that's such a beautiful way of looking at it, is that your nervous system, again, will do everything possible to keep you safe. And it does everything to communicate to you. And so if our core is a part of that survival instinct, then yeah, the way that I love to think about it is that the core also needs to work in this really beautiful synergistic way with our nervous system, again, to appropriately, you know, either fire or relax at the task at hand. The problem is, in this day and age, is that people don't know enough about their nervous systems. They don't trust their bodies anymore. They don't understand that things like pain are such beautiful messengers from our nervous system that something isn't working. And so the core can often be a really beautiful place to step back and assess in relation to sort of what is going on, like questioning, you know, as you say, like, is it too much gripping? Is there too much engagement? Is there too much stress? Is, you know, do you not have the capacity to soft? Does your diaphragm not move an inch when you try to breathe? So it's really interesting to integrate this conversation around our central nervous system, you know, and our breath and our core. I think it's, you know, in this yoga field, there's too much emphasis on just physical, physical, physical.
Quick break to share an offer. I have a 3-hour core workshop that's available on my website. It's an opportunity to take a deep dive into the scientific literature, to share some of the anecdotal evidence that has come through from experienced physios working within the pelvic health arena. But it also gives you some insights into how to get core engagement to happen reflexively. It's helped many people, and I'll just share a couple of testimonials. One person kindly wrote to me saying, "I just finished the core workshop and I am blown away by the information you provided." Another said, gives me goosebumps actually, "Thank you for your beautifully crafted core workshop. It was one of the best workshops I've ever taken. And believe me, I have taken a lot." Now you can learn more about the core too. Head to CelestePereira.com and in the workshops tab, click on core values. Then use the code RELAX, all lowercase, that's RELAX, to get 35% off.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I mean, the nervous system has got its own physical thing, but it also relates to so much more, doesn't it? Like, it feels like, because it's part of the mind and the thinking system, and then it kind of comes into your value system. So yeah, and it's so layered, because it really does, like I'm saying, touch upon so many different aspects of you as a human being. You know, it's pretty incredible how emotions can affect the nervous system, and then that has a knock-on effect into the physical. So yeah, the layers are just totally. It's so amazing. You speak about variety. I know that's something you champion. What do you think about practices that have got more sort of predictable patterns of movement that are repeated every day? What is your thinking around how things should maybe progress or modify within not just the industry, but even within people's practices on an individual basis?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't serve very well for adaptability, does it? And I think the last 18 months has really thrown a spanner in the works for people who only train predictability, you know? And so this whole, you know, I find that to some degree we all do it, even if you do like variety, right? So it can be quite common in the gym world. Monday is chest and dries, and then, you know, you've got legs or on a Tuesday, right? And then in the yoga world, it's like the same sequencing, or you know, facing the same direction on the yoga mat, or people love predictability and they feel really safe when they know what's coming, which is fine. Like, sometimes, again, to get people in that state of trust and in that state of trying to send them a message, you've got to keep an element of that, because I think there's so many people out there that are really suffering from like distrust in their body, distrust in teachers. So having that some form of predictability in what you offer can be really beautiful and beneficial. But my God, is it such a disservice to the reality of the world we live in. There's this guy, Dewey Nilsen, who I studied with in the FRC team, and he said that, you know, he had, I think it was a soccer player, and he used to spend their sessions, their training sessions, training his client's ankle in the rolled and sprained position.
Mm-hmm.
So they would do all these exercises with his ankle looking like, you know what your ankle looks like when
inversion.
You roll it, when you like, yes. And so, you know, he was trying to get that ankle really strong in that position, so that when, not if, when his ankle does roll or does break, all the structures, surrounding structures of the ankle, are going to be stronger and more adaptable to said position, right?
Yeah.
So I think, again,
and the nervous system, doesn't it? The nervous system then goes, oh, I recognize this. I know this quite well.
I know
and
this then, position. Yeah.
Yeah. And then your cerebellum's like, oh, wait, that's a little too far. Let me pull you back slightly. Like, it's incredible, the wiring with things like that.
Yeah. And the same can be said with the core. Like, if you know, there's so many modalities out there that are probably too extreme in terms of, you know, the yoga world takes, you know, it can be taken advantage of flexibility and hypermobility. And, you know, if you're really good at end ranges, then, you know, you'll probably be attracted to that. But then there's also so many people out there preaching of like, this isn't safe, this isn't safe, this isn't safe. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, can't we train our bodies to make it safe?
Yeah.
If we, and I go over this so much in my teacher trainings, the importance of progressive overload that is really missing in the yoga world.
Amen.
And I think it's, it's missing in relation to our joints. It's missing in relation to our core. And that is something that I am so thankful that I got from more of that, you know, weightlifting and strength training element of my education, is progressive overload is key in that arena, right? When you're trying to learn how to do the snatch or the Olympic lift or deadlift, it's all about progressive overload. And it's so important in relation, again, to your nervous system and to your core and to your joints. If you want to deadlift 120 kilos, but you can only currently do 30 kilos, then you have to go on a training program to get all your systems prepared to lift that 120 kilos. So no, it's not going to be safe for your body to jump from 30 kilos to 120 kilos, but that progressive overload schedule gets that lift to eventually one day be safe, right? And then so it could be the same with something like wheel pose or camel pose. Mm-hmm. You're taking someone who might sit at a desk for 10 hours and, again, doesn't know how to use their core appropriately. They don't diaphragmatic breathe. They're stressed all the time. And then you take them into a yoga class and they do camel pose and they've hurt themselves. And then so there's these modalities of yoga out there that are like, these back bends aren't good. This isn't good.
Yeah, but it's not the case. I know.
It's not the case. It's because you haven't taught the body how to progressively overload. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like it's one of the issues with group exercise fitness, I think, is because people walk into those rooms where people are doing some really intense, almost acrobatic gymnastic sorts of level movements, and there it is almost like a group pressure to really get into certain positions, but yeah, it's we rush the nervous system there, and then of course you get really hands-on teachers that are kind of pulling people into positions. And it's like, guys, that's just not how the body works. You don't just yank someone into a position. They have to be able to train these positions, like you say, progressively within the confines of what their nervous system is able to give them. And to be honest, when you start learning more about the nervous system, even sometimes there are certain positions that will be quite threatening to some people until you address higher order systems like the vision system or the vestibular system. They can't go there. So to just yank someone there is just asking for trouble. And then, of course, yoga gets labeled as the bad thing, isn't it? Often we hear functional trainers out there going, oh, yoga's so bad for people. And it's like, well, maybe just the yoga teachers haven't been taught about progressive overload.
I know. Yeah. It's quite beautiful what you can take from different modalities and start to, you know, I think what's so important is to gather a community who are willing and open to listen. And as a teacher, it's such a fine art to be able to service those in your class who do have availability and accessibility to said positions, but then to also educate and have empathy for those who, you know, don't have access to such positions, but to educate them as to maybe why, and, you know, maybe how can you get to that point, or maybe why is your body not letting you get to that point? I think that, you know, I really appreciate that about my community is that, you know, we love to explore movement, but we also really love to understand movement and why. Why is such a good question to just continually stay open to. And again, going back to the importance of studying under people who just spew one narrative and then another teacher who spews a narrative is to then, you know, have the capacity to step back and say, well, why are they spewing that narrative?
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. I know it's very late where you are, all the way in Australia. And I know that you've had to deal with a little baby who was a little bit upset earlier. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, Amy. But one thing that I ask everyone, if you had the ability to speak to everyone on this planet with a message, either through a billboard or a text, or to somehow get a message to everybody, what would your message to the world be?
Wow. That's a great question. Okay. Joy in all the systems at least once a day. Attempt that. Just do your best to attempt that. Body, brain, breathing, emotions. I think that even if you can just get like a flavor of that somehow, that's something I've been really focusing on in the last 6 months especially, and it's been really important part of my postpartum recovery is attempt, even just the attempt to tap into joy.
Wow. Thank you so much, Amy. And where can people find out more about you and the amazing things that you have on offer in this world?
Basically, everything is just Amy Carmody Yoga. My Instagram's Amy Carmody. My website is amycarmodyyoga.com.au. And yeah,
awesome.
Thanks for having me.
It's a huge pleasure. And thank you for your time, my love.
Thank you for listening and your continued support. If you feel that any of the topics that were shared today resonates with you, or perhaps you just feel that someone listening could benefit from this information, please do share it. Also, remember that you can support the podcast by leaving a review. That's all for now. I'd like to wish you love at First Science.